You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I am Lisa Wysocki. I'm in Ashland City, Tennessee, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, February 11th, episode 3882, brought to you by Chewy Equine. Good morning, Horse World.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. In our Home for Every Horse segment, we have Kelly on, who is with the Caribbean Thoroughbred Aftercare Program, and she's going to talk about thoroughbreds in the Caribbean. So we're going to talk about that and the work they're doing there to help them out. Also, we have JMO Sams is joining us for her annual report on the Ice Castle in New Hampshire, which is absolutely fascinating, and also her ponies. And we get an update on Lisa's movie, and we're going to talk about things no one else has done. It's going to be a fun segment. Also, in our auditor post show, we meet Auditor Andrew, who hasn't been on before, and we're going to introduce him to everybody. Well, Jamie is out horse shopping, she told me yesterday, and Lisa kindly, thank you so much, Lisa, for filling in this morning.
Of course.
I appreciate it. I think she went to California this. I hope she finds a horse soon.
Because, I do too.
Yeah, because it's getting old for me, her horse shopping. So, Lisa's in Tennessee, and she got hit by that wicked storm. Is your ice melting at all?
Yeah, it is. It is. But it's been, Glenn, 2.5 weeks of stuff. And we had some significant ice damage to our roof. And we're having to have part of our roof replaced.
The barn?
In the barn. Yeah. But the horses were all okay. I mean, everybody was okay. But it's been.
You posted a picture. It looked like 4 inches of a solid ice.
It was. It was 4 inches of solid ice. And I mean, it's just been incredible. The aftermath, you know, and I'm from Minnesota. I'm totally used to snow. But this ice and the amount of ice that we got in this whole area was just nuts. School was out for 2 weeks.
Wow. And then I assume that power is finally getting restored to most areas?
Yes. I think they finally got everybody hooked back up. But at one point, there were a quarter of a million people without power. And I have friends who are without power for 9 days. And you know, it's like, I don't know, 15 degrees.
Yeah.
So it's pretty challenging. And I will say this, Glenn, we didn't lose power once here at the farm. I was just blown away by that. Yeah, yeah, I mean, that never happens. You know, they don't plow the road in front of the barn, but we had power.
And you have a long lane, too.
We've got an 800-foot driveway, yeah.
And it's kind of hilly, too, so I imagine you have to plow that, right?
Yes, except it was so cold I couldn't get the tractor started. So, so it would, you know, it's like, you can't do this because you can't do the other thing because this other thing can't be done, you know?
Could you put the horses out at all?
So, you know, we have this overhang that we've got these run-in sheds that are attached to the barn. And then we've got this 14-foot overhang that's maybe, I don't know, 50 or 60 feet long. And so they just hung out there. They were smart that they didn't go out, except we have an Oldenburg who spent most of his life in Florida. I don't think he's ever seen this before. And so he went out in it at the very beginning and he trotted out, you know, with his big trot and he splayed like he was going to go down. He didn't, but he like very gingerly turned around and tiptoed back in.
He'll never go out again.
No. And you can just see it in his eyes and you can see his brain turning. It's like, oops, okay, now I know why they're all just hanging out here.
Have they gotten grumpy being with each other in close quarters?
They did after a while. They all got.
Well, not only that, you get the poop. There's nowhere to go with the poop. It's just a mess.
That's it. Yeah. You know, and you know, you can fill up the wheelbarrow, but all of a sudden, you know, we only have 5 horses, but you'll fill up a wheelbarrow pretty quickly with 5 horses.
Yeah.
And we have several wheelbarrows, but after 9 days and you can't get out, you're just making a big pile. Yeah, that's all you can do.
Well,
yeah,
I hope it warms
times.
Up. It's supposed to warm up this week, so.
Yeah, and it was yesterday, Glenn, it was 75 degrees here.
Oh, wow. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. When you guys usually have, you do get ice storms occasionally, but it usually gets warm the next day and then it goes away. You just have had a cold for weeks.
We did not get above freezing for like 10 days.
And that's unheard of in Tennessee.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And I think, you know, there are other areas that got hit pretty badly too. I think areas of Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia and Kentucky, you know, the whole area was really hit hard.
I've been following a TikTok girl who was in Tennessee in Nashville, and she's been going out every day giving coffee and sandwiches and stuff to the linemen.
Oh, wow. Good for her.
And she's become very popular with the linemen, by the way.
Oh, I bet.
She just has done it every day. Now she's getting so many donations. But when she would pull up to a street, there'd be 20 bucket trucks. They're lined up, one at every pole, because every pole was damaged.
Every pole, you know, and trees would come down, and they'd just get one pole fixed, and the trees cut away, and somebody hooked up, and then a block down, then another tree would fall. And Glenn, I didn't know they could do this, but we had trees that were exploding because the ice came down kind of slushy, and then it froze, and it would freeze like inside the tree and expand, and then the trees would explode. I know, right? Welcome to Tennessee. That's
it. I see an ice storm in your next book. I see that coming.
Probably, yes. Yes.
All right, let's do some Daily Winnies.
From the podcast to the barn, here's some hidden birthday wishes to keep you warm. Hope it lasts all year long. Happy birthday, friends.
Well, we have one birthday, and it's not an auditor. It's a host, Justine Brooke of Heels Down Happy Hour. It's her birthday. She lives right down the road here in Tampa. So happy birthday to Justine. We love Justine. She's terrific.
Well, Glenn, my daily whinny goes to my neighbors, and I'm sure neighbors everywhere throughout the Southeast. I mean, we just all checked on each other, and it was just so comforting to know that, you know, I might not be able to get over to your house, but you could slide something across the ice if I needed it, you know?
Well, that's a good point. How about food? Did you run out of food? Because you couldn't even get out of your driveway.
No. And, you know, we had 4 or 5 days to prepare. I mean, we knew this was coming. Everybody knew it was coming. And so there was plenty of food for all the horses and the cats and myself. And I think everybody was pretty well prepared, just knowing it was coming in.
Well, the nice part about your fridge going out when the power goes out, when it's this temperature, you can put stuff outside. So
yes, and a lot of people did.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true. We had to do it in the fast, too.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you do what you have to do.
Well, I'm glad you're doing okay. Now, you're switching gears from ice to movie. You're getting close to making this movie.
We are. It's really kind of getting very exciting, and we're having like almost daily meetings at this point. I'm going up tomorrow to Indianapolis and Lexington to look at some horses for horse casting, and not sure these are the ones, but if they aren't, we've got some others that we're going to be looking at soon. And I know they're doing people casting.
Oh, are they? So
yeah,
let's remind new listeners that you're an author and you wrote this series of Cat Enright murder mystery books, and they were picked up to do a movie, and you're doing like a real movie with a real production company and everything.
So it's very exciting, and it's so here's the question. I was going to post something on the auditor page too. So would you like to see an actor who is like a B-level actor who is pretty good, who does an awesome Southern accent? Or would you like to see somebody who is like an A-level actor who maybe doesn't quite get the accent right? That's the big dilemma.
I'd rather see, in my opinion, I'd rather see a B or C-list actor who's good at writing and has a Southern accent.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
I mean, and so what? It doesn't have to be A-list. You know, I mean, look at what's her name that played Katniss Everdeen. She was not popular before she played that role.
No, a lot of people weren't.
Yeah, she was a B or C actor. Almost everybody in that was.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'd rather see, all of us would rather see a good horse person.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so one of the things, because the production company's out of L.A., I've been telling them, you know, a Texas and Oklahoma accent is not like a Tennessee, Mississippi, Alabama accent.
And even a Georgia Southern accent is not the same as Alabama. Nothing's like Alabama, let's be honest.
Well, yeah.
That's its own unique Southern accent.
Yeah, yeah. So so I'm like telling, I'd rather them do no accent at all. Because if they can't nail it, if they can't get it right, to me it just sounds cheesy.
And Tennessee is a little more refined Southern accent, isn't it?
It is. You know, we do, and I'm from Minnesota.
I was going to say uppity, but refined is a better word.
Thank you, Glenn. you know, Tennesseans pronounce R's where a lot of the other Southern accents don't, and the speech is faster and the words are kind of slurred together, and it's really more about how the sentence is phrased versus the accent itself.
It is interesting that you can go literally 100 miles from Tennessee,
and it's
completely different in Alabama or Arkansas, or, you know, even Mississippi.
Yeah,
especially
it really
in Louisiana. Then it's completely different in Louisiana again.
Completely, yeah. Completely. Yeah, I mean, I can go, you know, I can go, as you said, 100 miles down the road, and I can't understand a word somebody's saying, you know, because I'm not from here, even though I've been here forever. You know, I grew up in the north, so it's still different for me.
My family is French Canadian, so my parents and grandparents all spoke French, Canadian French together,
really?
Which is a kind of a modified version of French.
Yeah.
And then a lot of them then moved to Louisiana. This is where the Cajuns came from. They were all Canadian when they moved to Louisiana. And yet, when I was down there listening to the Cajun English, I didn't understand three quarters of what that person said.
Right. Yeah.
Get it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a neighbor, and he has a great Southern accent, but I can't understand him because he just runs all his words together.
Yeah, it sounds like one big long string.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, this is very exciting. I know I'm coming up in May to Lexington. You're going to be doing some filming then.
We are. And, you know, we're still looking for a few extras for a press conference scene on May 14th. So if you're going to be in Lexington on May 14th, let me know.
That we're doing before HP?
Yes.
Oh, good.
So yes.
I have to wear my cowboy hat and the whole thing.
We need people to pose as reporters. So.
I think I can do that. I think you could do that. It's AHP. It's American Horse Publications. They're all reporters. I think we got that covered.
I think we've got it covered. I know Heather Wallace is going to be there.
Oh, my God. Don't let her. She'll be in front row.
Yeah. And Ashley's going to be there.
Oh, is Ashley coming in?
Ashley's coming in, and she's going to be in the scene, and you're going to be in the scene.
Oh, my God.
Ashley
and Heather together. That's going to be.
I know. It's going to be so much fun.
I hope you're looking for a lively press conference. Because... cut.
It's going to be
cut,
total fun.
Cut. You two in the front.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. It's just going to be. It's going to be fun. So if anybody's listening, wants to be part of that, get a hold of me. It's just lisawysocki@gmail.com.
All right. Yeah, me signed up, right? I'm going.
I do. I've got you. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Lisa. Good luck with all of this. We'll keep in touch and find out how it's all going. Well, you know what? We were just talking about cold mornings, and there's much shorter days. Hopefully, they're getting a little longer now. And you're all wearing extra layers. You're sick of taking 20 minutes to dress every day to go out to the barn. And I get it. We used to live there, too. But winter barn life looks a little bit different right now. It's going to get better, people. It's going to get better. But Chewy also helps make it better, from feeding supplements to blankets and hoof care and prescriptions and getting everything that your horse needs delivered straight to your barn. So Lisa, you just have to walk out the long lane to pick it up at the end of the road instead of having it not show up at all.
That would be nice.
Plus, with fast, free shipping on orders over $49 and auto ship that keeps essentials arriving on time, you can skip the supply run and make the most of every day at the barn. And you know what? They have garbage days Tuesdays here in the neighborhood, and we live in a horsey neighborhood. And I rode my bike around the other day on Tuesday. I must have counted 12 Chewy boxes out to curb.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Everybody gets Chewy here. We have a Chewy warehouse in Ocala. So you order something, it's like it comes by carrier pigeon in an hour. You know, it just shows up. It definitely shows up the next morning. If they carry it at the warehouse here, we get it immediately. So it's kind of nice. And as you all know, I think that the deal went through with Chewy buying Smart Equine.
I heard about that.
Yeah, so I think that deal went through, and now Smart Pack basically will be part of Chewy. So for Life with Horses, there's Chewy. Stop or shop now at chewy.com/equine. That's chewy.com/equine.
Now in our Home for Every Horse Rescue highlight of the month. Today, we're speaking with Kelly Stobel, the co-founder and executive director of Caribbean Thoroughbred Aftercare, Inc. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us what your organization is.
Okay, so we are, of course, a thoroughbred aftercare program. We do rehab, we retrain, we rehome, we also have sanctuary horses. We do have some non-thoroughbred breeds that we've rescued over the years through cases with police officers. So, but we basically mostly focus with the thoroughbreds.
And I think we should say that for those who don't know that you are based in Puerto Rico.
Yes, we are based in Puerto Rico. I've been here 30 years and
oh
the organization, we're on our 10th year anniversary this year.
Oh, how cool is that? Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So how many racing thoroughbreds are there in the islands?
Thousands.
Really?
Yeah, there's approximately, all given times, 1,400 on the track all year round. We race all year, 4 days a week. And we have breeding farms on the track, on the island. And we have some equestrian centers that have the retired thoroughbreds. So yeah, there's a lot of thoroughbreds.
Now, do you have just one track in your area, or are there multiple ones?
Yes, we have one track.
Okay, awesome.
How is it
awesome.
I never even thought about the fact that there was a track in Puerto Rico. I'm not alone in that, am I?
I'm sure not. Yeah. No, because I guess I never thought about it either, but I'm glad you
have. Yeah, racing is a huge part of the culture here. I mean, there's they love horse racing here.
Now, what kind of quality of horses do you get there? Are they like the real top front runners? Are they kind of mid-level horses or what?
Well, a lot of the horses that are imported from the tracks in the States are usually ones that are running in the lower claiming. A lot of times horses that should be retired and not come here. And then of course we do have, you know, the 2-year-olds coming out of the sales that are unraced. So I think that there's pretty much the same on both sides. I mean, the sales is becoming more popular because the Racing Commission has tried to educate the owners on not bringing in so many horses that shouldn't be racing here. And then, of course, we have our homebred horses. But because we don't have enough homebred horses to fill the racing cards, that's why, you know, they continue to bring in better quality horses from the States to run in the import races.
Got it. And I want to get back to that in just a minute. But, you know, some years ago, I did a story for a horse magazine about horses in Hawaii, and they had some special challenges that the rest of us here in the 48 states don't need to worry about. And so just in general, as far as horse care, it's more of a tropical climate. Is there any specific issue that you deal with there that we might not know about?
I find the climate, I'm originally from England and grew up for 10 years in Canada. I find the climate is very hard on especially the thoroughbreds here. It's either super, super rainy or super, super hot and dry. And the footing, the terrain here is very rough, so it's hard on their feet. We of course have to import, we import all of our hay and, grain from Florida just because we're able to get, a better quality, which helps us in the rehabilitation, especially period, because these horses come in and they kind of fall apart, you know, I mean, like with pretty much all aftercares, they kind of fall apart in their first couple of months off the track and they need a little bit of extra care. And I mean, we pretty much order everything on Amazon to get in from the States. We do have tack stores on the island, a few, but it's, you know, because everything's shipped in, it's a lot more expensive to buy it locally than it is to try and get it online or buy it from a supplier in the States.
Yeah. Now, do you have any issues with paraplasmosis there?
Yes. Oh. Good. Yeah, you've been doing your homework.
A little bit.
Yeah, pyroplasmosis is a big problem, and everybody who knows me knows how much I've been like fighting with this issue with the USDA for years, over a decade, probably 2 decades. And Yeah, it's endemic on the island. So any of those horses cannot be shipped back to the U.S. There is a treatment for it, but the success rate is not very high, and it can be very hard on them. It's expensive, and the time period is quite long to do the treatment. It has to be done two or three times. So, yeah.
Maybe we should back up and tell people what that is in case people don't know.
Oh, okay. So the pyroplasmosis is a tick. It's a tick endemic disease here in Puerto Rico. It is passed not just by an infected tick, but also by anything that is infected with blood from a horse that has pyroplasmosis. So like it can pass if you use reused needles, IV lines, dirty dental equipment, anything like that could pass pyroplasmosis from one horse to another.
Is it like Lyme? Does it have the same kind of symptoms as Lyme does?
I'm not quite sure about Lyme disease because we don't have that here. But, I mean, here it's only, I mean, we have like 12, 13 horses here on the farm that have pyroplasmosis, and you would never know. I mean, they're 100% healthy. I find that if their immune system gets compromised in some way, it can trigger. And they can end up getting very lethargic. They can get anemic. Their limbs start to swell, and they can deteriorate. We use a product that's donated to us from Finish Line, which is called Immunex, which we've had a lot of luck with. So all the pyro horses do get the Immunex every day as a supplement.
That sounds a lot like Lyme, actually. And it does. Does it go neurological too?
No.
Okay.
Hmm. No, they just start to deteriorate. I mean, I've never lost a horse to pyro.
Well, that's good.
Ever. No. That's good. And I mean, you'd never be able to tell a horse, like when you come here to the farm, who has pyro and who doesn't.
Okay.
Well, you know, the other thing that comes to mind when I'm thinking Puerto Rico is hurricanes. And so do you guys have any like special prep that you do? I mean, how do the horses get through a hurricane? How do you do that?
Yeah, our barn is very old, and but my husband has secured it enough. The roofing is tied down. We only have 11 stalls. We are going to be expanding a bit this year with some new stalls. And then we do have a couple of pastures down below that flood, so we do have to move the horses up. We do have a couple of options that if we need to get the horses off the farm, we can either, there's a big cement quarantine barn at the racetrack that we could take the horses there, or the USDA facility quarantine barn. We could probably ask them for assistance, but so far we've been okay. I mean, Hurricane Maria, which was the really, really big one. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a lot of horses here at that time. They were boarding at another farm, which had a hurricane proof barn. So they were fine there, but yeah, we always have a lot of hay in stock, and our grain is in stock. Even though we do import it, we always make sure we have, you know, enough backup. And yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is just the flooding of those two pastures down the bottom.
And yeah, I assume power, because you're known for losing power during hurricanes. Do you have generators on
site?
We do.
We recently, we've always had generators, but we recently invested in a bigger one this year so we could run our water pump.
Yeah.
So if the electricity goes out and the water goes out, then we have enough power with the new generator to keep, to supply water.
That would be a lot hauling water for 11 horses.
Yeah, and trust me, in Hurricane Maria, we only had 10 horses here, but it was a lot of work. I mean, we would have to go to the water company, which was a couple of, about 20 minutes away, and we'd have to fill up the tanks and take water to the pastures. Yeah, it was a lot of work. So,
oh, wow.
It's nice with the new generator. Now it runs everything.
Wow. Wow. So you take horses off the track and rehabilitate them, get them adopted out. So do a lot of them then come back to like the 48 states here in the United States? And how does that work?
Yeah. So basically, because of the lack of homes on the island, or not so much lack of homes, lack of responsible homes on the island, just with people that have the knowledge on how to care for a thoroughbred, we do send pretty much all the horses that do not have pyro back to the States. So we usually team up with partner Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance organizations because we're accredited through them. And so we do a lot of transfers. So we'll find an organization that has a spot and we'll discuss, you know, what the horse may be able to do. And then we'll transfer the horse to them. And then the horse can be adopted out under their contract. So it just gives it a safety net. Because if we do direct adoptions with people in the States, if something happens in the future with that horse and he needs to be rehomed, well, we're not there on the mainland, so we can't take the horse back.
Wow.
So, yeah, so we, a lot of breeders reach out to us when they find out their horses are in Puerto Rico, and some will offer homes, some will offer funding, some will offer both, some will offer nothing. So we do transfer also to breeders, and then we do have previous adopters that have adopted horses from us before that if for some reason they have space on their farm, that we will do a direct adoption to them.
Wow. And so other than thoroughbreds, which you're real involved in, what is like the main breed there in Puerto Rico? Is there one that's more prevalent than others?
Well, the Pasofinos, there's a big community of the Pasofinos on the island, the Puerto Rican Pasofino. Mm-hmm. I think that I would say probably the majority of the horses is, of course, the local breed, which is like, you know, the like a mixed breed dog. Mm-hmm. And which are great. There's amazing horses like the mixed breed dogs. I mean, they just live forever and they're so strong and hardy. But the thoroughbreds, I mean, there's thousands of thoroughbreds here. So I would say there's a lot of thoroughbreds and the mixed breed and the Pasos.
Huh. Interesting. So over 10 years, you have dealt with hundreds and hundreds of horses, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. Is there one in particular whose journey from the track to their new home kind of really shows why you do this work?
We had a horse a few years back called Dark Desire. She was a mare, and the breeder had reached out to us about her and said, you know, she was down here and he'd like to help if he could get her home. And we tried to get her retired through us when she left the track. She was a New York bred out of Stonebridge Farms.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner of the farm was a lovely man. And anyway, she ended up going to a breeding farm. She wasn't very well taken care of. She was in foal. She was emaciated. She aborted the baby, and I think she was like in her eighth month.
Oh.
And wow. Anyway, I reached out to the farm owner, and we were able to get her back here. And she arrived here just in awful condition. I mean, she torn complete suspensory breakdown on both fronts. Super, super thin. And luckily she didn't have ticks, so she didn't have pyro. So we kind of nursed her back to health, and then they took her back. And I mean, it was just amazing how just within a year of being up there and having good grass and good, really good care. And I mean, she was so stunning, and she lived for, I would say for 4 years at Stonebridge until just her fetlocks were so bad. They ended up having to put her down, but there's a lot of stories like that. So I don't think I really have one that stands out to me. But these thoroughbreds are so versatile. I mean, they just bounce back. I mean, we've got two here from St. Thomas that were like emaciated over and over again and rescued and emaciated and rescued. And then we ended up bringing in about six horses from St. Thomas a couple years ago. And those two are still here. And they've just, from the first day they came in, they've just changed so much because they're so unsure and afraid and just have lost all trust in the human race from everything they've been through. And they just all bounce back. I mean, it's just incredible how I see them come from such bad places and they just end up being okay in the end.
Yeah. And that just has to be so heartwarming to see that change in those horses. I just, you know, it's just amazing. Just amazing. Do you have a horse, a current horse there that you'd like to tell us about?
Okay, so we have right now Sniveling. He is an 8-year-old Kentucky bred. And he's actually going to be, we get a few grants a year from After the Finish Line. It's a California-based organization that mm-hmm. helps fund different horses throughout different organizations in the States. And they're going to pay for his quarantine and flight to get him back. But we don't have a spot for him. So he is, he came just last year from Sam Houston Racetrack, unfortunately, as a 7-year-old with pretty bad arthritis in his fetlocks. So he's one of those horses that should have never been brought here. And, he's a really nice horse. He's 16 hands, chestnut, big white blaze on his face, real flashy looking. He's pretty going to need a low level career. He does have pretty bad arthritis in both his front fetlocks, but it's manageable. So yeah, we'd like to try and find somebody, find a spot for him where he can either, you know, stay for a couple of months and just get situated. And then maybe that person could help us find him a home, or maybe somebody that's looking for a nice trail horse to plod around on. He's pretty much doesn't have any vices. He's a really good boy.
Oh, that's awesome. Do you have a lot of horses there that really should never be there? I mean, I'm sure every horse should never be there. Every horse should be cared for. But do you have a lot of horses who really should have ended up somewhere else?
Yeah, always. I mean, I think the importation of horses into the islands, especially older horses that have a lot of injuries and stuff going on medically, they shouldn't be coming here because, you know, we don't get a lot of support from the industry. So it's like, it's always thrown on us to try and get them out of here. And I've tried really hard to find homes here for the horses, but it's just the lack of education on how to take care of this type of horse. And a lot of the adoptions that we do locally end up coming back to us full of ticks, super underweight, terrible feet, because people just don't, I mean, these are thoroughbreds, you know, they've been under the care of a human their whole life. And it's just trying to turn these horses out into a 100-acre farm and forget about them. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. So, yeah, there's a lot of horses that should not end up here.
Unfortunately, a lot of them end up that way here too. So
that's true.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, I will say that, you know, I'm not against horse racing. I think Puerto Rico, the track here is beautiful track. And I think it can be the best racing in the Caribbean. But I think, you know, in this day and age, we need to put a little more focus on the horse's well-being and welfare. And it's not just about when they're racing. It's about what happens to them when they're done racing. You know,
right.
You have to be responsible. Everybody that shares a part in the life of that horse.
Well, we appreciate the work you're doing at Caribbean Thoroughbred Aftercare. Where should people go to find one, the horses that are available for adoption and more information about you guys?
Pretty much on our website is www.ctahorse.com. We have our Facebook page, Caribbean Thoroughbred Aftercare, Instagram, CTA_PR. And yeah, our website's the best to go to see what horses we have for adoption. And also, if there's anybody looking for a horse that may ended up down here in Puerto Rico, previous connections, breeders, whatever, you can also reach out to us. My email is director@ctahorse.com. And if the horse is running down here and you're interested, we do have a watch list on our website that you can put the horse on the watch. And so hopefully we'll be able to get the horse back one day for you.
That's great. And I also wanted to thank A Home for Every Horse who helped set this up today. We appreciate all the work they do there as well. Kelly, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Want to reach a passionate, engaged audience of horse lovers? The Horse Radio Network, with thousands of listeners worldwide, offers unique sponsorship opportunities to connect your brand with horse owners, riders, and enthusiasts. Over 90% of our listeners have bought a product from a HRN ad in the past year. Partner with HRN and take your brand to the next level. visit www.horseradionetwork.com/advertise today.
Well, she is returning this year. She comes back every winter, and she talks to us about the cool work that she does up there in New Hampshire. Her name is JMO Sams. She's an auditor of ours, and JMO's a horse person. We're going to talk about that, too, but we have her on for another reason, and that is she's the only one we know that builds ice castles for a living. Hi, JMO.
How cool.
Hi.
I mean, you do have a cool job. Who else can say that?
I don't know. I enjoy it, though.
You know, you go to apply for a loan, and you tell them you build ice castles for a living. That's got to raise some eyebrows. JMO, tell us about what you do for the people who missed it last year. And because what you do is, when I think of ice castles, I think of about the ones I've seen over in Sweden and stuff where they cut big blocks of ice and they stack them up, right? And that's how they make the ice castle. But what you do is a little bit different up there.
Yeah, as far as I know, we're the only ones who do it the way we do. And there's ice castles, the company, we have them in different states. And like the actual ice castles, we all do it the same way. But instead of cutting blocks of ice, we grow a bunch of icicles, and then we harvest all the icicles, and then we run around with buckets of slush, and we glue those icicles in different formations, and then we run like irrigation sprinkler heads on them overnight so everything gets bigger, and then we come in and do it the next day. So the more it grows, the higher we have to climb up with our big spiky boots and everything to keep going up.
So, and they're really cool. High. Oh my goodness. I mean, some of these look like they're 30, 40 feet high. They're really high.
Yeah. They do get really tall. The taller they are, the harder it is to climb into them. It's helpful if you can climb ice, but when you're an ice climber, you're not usually carrying bags of icicles and buckets of slush with you, so it's a little bit different.
I'm sorry, that's just amazing.
And do you grow the icicles on the side of a house, you know, like off the spouting like we do at, you know, at home? Is that how you grow the icicles?
When we're desperate, we will take them off buildings, but for the most part, we build these racks that it's like chain link fence, and we spray those with water to grow the same kind of icicles that are on your house.
How long does it take to grow a 20-foot icicle?
We grow them to about, like from your elbow to like the tip of your middle finger.
Okay.
So they're not super big when we grow them. But when we put them into place and grow them overnight, those kind of build up on each other. So eventually some of those icicles do reach from the top of those towers towards the ground. But that takes like the whole season versus like overnight.
Does it matter if it gets warm? I mean, if you have a 50 degree day, does the whole thing melt and you're out of business?
hopefully not. we build not only up, but to make things safer for us and also to help prevent melting, we build like scaffolding out of icicles on the inside. So like the bigger ice melt or ice mass, I mean, it's harder to melt all of that in a day. And luckily, it's been an incredibly cold winter, so we have had no issues with melting.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because it has been so cold in New England. You guys are up in New Hampshire. Now, we should clarify, too, this is an open-to-the-public thing. People can come in and see it. And
yeah.
Is it during the day or at night most people come in?
Most people prefer it at night, but we are open on weekends. We open at 11, so you can see it in the daylight. On weekdays, there's not as much business, so they're mostly just open at night when people want to come in after work or after a day of skiing, and then they can see it all lit up in the dark.
And the lighting is incredible, too. I think lighting makes half of this, right?
At the night, definitely. Yeah. It's all different colors. They change colors, too, occasionally for, like, Valentine's Day. Once in a while, if they're feeling ambitious, they'll change all the colors of the light. So it'll be all like pinks and reds and purples. But so we don't get to that every year.
How long will you work on, I love that you say growing them. I'm just picturing fertilizer and stuff, you know. How long does it take you to get it to the point where you're open to the public? You start working on it and now we're open.
Depending on weather, really. Around Thanksgiving, it starts getting cold enough that we can turn on water. and usually we're open by mid-January. But this year, oh, I forget exactly the time, but from about Thanksgiving till we were open to the public on December 27th. So that
Oh
was
my
our
goodness.
shortest season ever for
Wow.
building.
And is it just a flat field when you start?
Pretty much. It's a flat field in a pile of dirt in a couple spots.
Okay.
But it is all ice. There's no structure underneath it.
Have they ever tried coloring the ice itself? I don't know, with dye or whatever.
I did try that last year.
And
I got ambitious and tried to make some stained glass windows. It's not good in the sun. It fades really fast, and if it gets any melt, the color just runs
runs.
everywhere and looks
Then it
disgusting.
just looks
So
sad.
yeah. So the blue color it gets is it's not Gatorade or de-icer or anything like that. It is just that's just the color ice turns when you get a certain mass.
And I assume this must be pretty popular if people come back every year.
Yeah, on like Saturdays and Sundays, it's so busy. Sometimes we have to have the police directing traffic because like the traffic to get into the ice castle is way down the road past the only intersection in town. It's a small town.
And what
It
town
sells out all the
is it New
time.
Hampshire?
It's in Woodstock. People know Lincoln better, but Lincoln and Woodstock are kind of a little community together.
And that's kind of up in ski country anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, we're right in the heart of the White Mountains. There's so many ski resorts and mountains and lots of winter things.
Well, do you have any funny stories from this year?
Oh, well, this is sort of an ice and a horse thing.
Okay.
I got so the part of the ice castle we're in right now, I come in the morning and I take a dingo, which is pretty much a walk behind or stand on skid steer, and I grind up all the floor so it's not slippery for people. And while I was doing that, I get a phone call that, "Don't worry, the police have gotten them back to the ice castle property, but there's 20 loose draft horses. Can you go help with that?"
On
All
your
of the sleigh
property?
ride horses got out.
Were they
The
cooperative
cowboys,
or did they want to play in the ice
yeah,
castle?
they just wanted to run around. I don't know. The cowboys showed up. They're the ones who are in charge of the sleigh horses and run the sleigh rides. And but they went into the woods, so it's all this deep snow that never gets walked on because no one goes in the woods over there. And there's just these 20 loose horses in like hip deep snow. So it was a workout trying to find them all.
Fun
But once we
times.
got, yeah, we got a couple back, and then the rest were like, "Oh, our buddies are going back home and there's food, so we should probably all also go follow."
It's something too, wouldn't I know, having had loose draft horses before. It's something when you really don't want to get in the way of a group of them who are deciding it's fun to run around.
No.
No. It's very intimidating. That's funny. So they do sleigh rides, and you have slides and all kinds of things there, right?
Yeah, there's a tubing hill. We have ice slides. They do the horse sleigh ride through the woods, and then there's like a light walk trail that you can just see a bunch of lights in the woods too.
And I assume there's alcohol because you are in New Hampshire, so.
Yeah, there's a bar. They're calling it the Frozen Tap this year, so you can go get a drink out of either a normal cup or you can pay more to have your drink served in a cup made of ice.
Well, who wouldn't do that? I mean, you're going. You might as well have an ice cup, right? I mean, it's like
Yeah.
Now, I want to switch gear. By the way, give the website for that in case anybody is in New England and they want to do it.
I believe it's just icecastles.com,
That's correct.
and that's for all of the locations.
That's correct. And you can check out what locations if there's any near you. So I want to talk to you a little bit about your horses too. Do I remember right? Are you a Morgan girl?
Yeah, I have a little Morgan.
Yeah. And what do you do with your Morgan?
All sorts of things. I grew up riding English. So that's where my heart is. But the barn we're at, they run gymkhanas. So we compete in those for fun. And it is kind of weird seeing a Morgan running on barrels. But
That must be fun, though, Gymkhanas. That's not something we talk about very often, is it, Lisa?
no, not at all, but they are fun.
So can you kind of describe what a gymkhana is for those that haven't done it?
At least the way they work where we are, you come in and you pay for the day. There's usually five classes that kind of go in order from kind of warm up to like what you're doing. So you have like a dash that you just kind of run around one barrel and run back, and then speed barrels where you weave up and back, and then your normal barrel racing. And there's pole bending, and there's always at ours, there's always a mystery race at the end, which could be anything. Sometimes it involves jumping, which is hilarious because like I love jumping being an English rider, but most of the people who are doing these don't jump and their horse has never seen a jump. So those ones are always funny.
I love what you wrote to me in an email. You said, "We even won some money once or twice. It was only $5, but still a very good feeling not to be dead last in everything." I got to tell you, a lot of us relate to
Yes.
My little Morgan is not fast, but he has a great time. And we don't do the gymkhana stuff outside of the shows. Like we don't practice. We either go around bareback or we ride English. And so when he gets there on the show days, there we don't even trailer anywhere. It's just right at the farm we're at. And he hears the music and sees the other horses and he just gets a little extra pep in his step, but he's still way slower than all these, trained horses.
Hey, as long as he's having fun, that's the main thing.
Yeah, he loves it.
You gotta, I mean, you're up there in the White Mountains. Are there a lot of horse trails through the mountains?
There are some trails. A lot of like there's a lot of snowmobile trails for the winter, and a lot of times in the summer, you can't bring a vehicle out there, but you can bring like a horse, or you can walk or hike or bring your bicycle. So people use those.
And if people aren't familiar with the White Mountains, I mean, it's not one mountain. It's like a lot of mountains.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's like 20 or 30, isn't it? There's a lot of mountains. It's
Oh, hundreds.
and there's a lot of high peaks too, like 4,000 footers and stuff. There's a lot of mountains up there. It's so cool up there. It really is. Well, this has been fun. Thank you for making your annual visit. We'll have you back next year to talk about what's different with next year's castle, okay?
Yeah, of course. Sounds good.
Thank you, Jamie.
Whether you're hauling to a show, heading to a clinic, or just clocking highway miles, fuel costs add up fast. U.S. Rider diesel savings, powered by open roads, can save you up to 50 cents per gallon at thousands of gas stations across the country. High mileage drivers could save more than $700 a year. It's free to join, and as a gift from U.S. Rider, you'll get free priority processing when you sign up. Head to myopenroads.com/US Rider to start saving today.
Well, Lisa, I posted in the auditor room this morning something that now has 150 comments already. I said, name one thing that you've done that you don't think anyone else in the comments has done. And we have 153 comments
Oh
already.
my gosh.
Apparently, this one struck a nerve, but I thought we'd go through these. I'm not going to name names at all, so
Okay.
we won't name names. But I wanted to see which ones would we try, or have we done, or there's like no way we're even qualified to do it. Okay?
Right.
All right. So here's one. Oh, it's I will say that this person is on the show in the post show. He played Capture the Flag on horseback. I've never heard of that.
Me either.
That
No.
sounds fun, actually.
It does. Yes.
You would try that one. I think you
I
would
would
try
try that
that.
one. Absolutely. Yeah.
Flown in a glider. No,
No,
no, no.
not going up.
I love
Not going
flying. I
up.
love airplanes. I've flown in helicopters and airplanes and all kinds of stuff. Glider.
Glenn, if it's taller than 16 hands, I don't get on. I just don't.
You know, maybe I'd fly in a glider if there was another pilot in there with me and I wasn't alone. I might try
Would you?
that. Yeah, you know, when we go to Alaska for the cruise, where I'm going to do a float plane. I've always wanted to do a float plane. And
Okay.
Anchorage has the largest float plane base in the world, I think. There's like
Oh,
hundreds
wow.
of them there. So I'm going to try a float plane when I go up.
Okay.
Here's somebody that sold a lot of Girl Scout cookies as a 12-year-old to earn a scholarship to a horseback riding camp in Wyoming. Well, that's
Oh,
pretty cool.
I that's me. That's me. I always, when I was a Girl Scout, I always sold the cookies.
Did you? You were always number one cookie seller.
I was.
Yeah, you're an overachiever that way, I think.
Yeah. No, I just like the cookies.
Here's somebody that showed a Ayrshire dairy cow at the North American International Livestock Expo, and she had a picture there of her and her dairy cow, and she was in her whites. I wanted to see if she was in all white. She was, could you, that person whose name I'm not going to say, please explain why you wear all whites? I assumed it had to do with the milkman, but you get dirty with dealing with cows. Get the whole white thing.
You do. And I used to know that. I used to date a dairy farmer and I knew that, but for the life of me, I guess because I'm old, Glenn, I can't figure it out. I can't remember.
It has to do with the milkman being white, I assume.
Maybe.
I don't know. This person walked across the frozen Neva River in St. Petersburg, Russia. Well, that's not something everybody gets to do every day.
No. I guess how frozen was the river?
Yeah. I assume very frozen. She's still here to write about it. So, I mean,
true.
I think going to Russia right now would not be on a list for Americans. I don't think that would be a great idea.
No, I would not want to do that.
Been in a burning building on purpose as a firefighter. I'm glad she had it on purpose.
No.
You know, I'm not cut out for that either. No.
No.
And Steph either owned a crotch rocket motorcycle or won a local CrossFit competition. Have you ever ridden motorcycle?
Yeah, so I used to date this guy who had a motorcycle. It was like a little Yamaha. It wasn't like a big like Harley Hog or anything. But yeah, we used to go all over. I wouldn't do it now probably, but I had fun then. I was like 20.
I've only been on a motorcycle once with my brother, and he scared the crap out of me, and then I didn't want to go anymore. So I think it depends who you go with the first time.
So did he scare you intentionally?
No, I just think I
just got
scared. I just didn't. Yeah. Well, he's my little brother. You don't trust your little brother as much as you should, probably. Oh, here's something you and I will never do. Sang at Carnegie Hall.
Oh, no.
No. Yeah, no. That ain't happening.
No. No.
Here's one. Oh, ride ostriches.
Really?
Oh, I'm getting her on the show.
Oh, you have to. You have to
get her on the show.
So at Canterbury Park and probably at other racetracks, they have like the exotic race day.
Yes.
And they always have ostrich races where they have the jockeys riding the ostriches. And I tell you what, they're kind of mean, number one. And number two, they can duck out and spin like in a half a second.
And they're fast.
They're fast, yes. Yes.
There's not much to sit on there, is there?
No, there is not.
All right, I'm going to get her on the show.
Not much to hold on to either.
I'm going
to
get her on the show. We're going to. How about when skiing in the mountains of Japan? I've tried skiing. You grew up north. Were you a skier?
Not a big skier, but I did ski some. But I never, it wasn't really my thing. I never could figure out how to stop.
Yeah, that was my problem too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we stopped all right.
Well, yes. Not the approved way.
Yeah. Tobogganing, though, a couple of the ski runs in Canada that we went to had these great tobogganing runs, and that was so much fun. That was great.
Yeah.
I like that. Let's see here. Okay, I wasn't expecting this. Worked as a mall Easter bunny for a season.
Oh, I would do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Too many kids.
I would do that. I think that would be fun.
I could never do Santa either. Too many kids.
Well, and I take caveat here. I might do it for a day.
Yeah.
not for a season.
Not whole season.
But I think it would be fun.
Oh, Kaylee went dark on us. Witnessed a homicide on vacation. Oh, Kaylee, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
That's something that we hope that none of us get to do.
No.
Oh, no. And she posted a picture. Hit myself in the eye with the snap of a lead rope. Oh, she just did it too. Thankfully, we'll make a full recovery. And there's a picture of her swollen eye. Oh,
have actually done that.
Oh, we've all hit our face.
I have done that. It is so painful.
Oh, right in the eye.
Yes, so painful.
That's something we don't want to do. That's on the
don't want to do. No, no.
Oh, here's a fun one. I have to get on the show too. Clicker trained a turkey vulture. She's in a unique category there. I don't think a whole lot of people have trained a turkey vulture to do anything.
I'm sure not. Wow.
God, I no offense to the person who did this, but they're really ugly.
I want to know why.
Yeah, I'm getting her on the show.
Yeah.
You know, this could be a good podcast.
It really could be.
Just
it
have
really
people come
be.
On and talk about all these different experiences.
Weird things.
Yeah, it could be like a 10-minute show. Oh, this would be fun.
Yeah, or you make it longer and you have a couple people on.
Yeah.
Because I want everything you've mentioned, Glenn. I want to know more. I want to know why. I want to know when. I want to know, how it came out. I want to know everything.
Let's see here. this person I'm gonna throw out under the bus because she's a host. Solange, who does the Writer podcast every month, she flew to London for only 26 hours to be measured for a tweed hunt coat and then flew home.
Oh, I would do that.
Yes,
but...
that's a first world equestrian problem right there.
Yes. Wow.
Oh. This one, I once found one of our ducklings drowned in a Rubbermaid tub of rainwater as a teen. I did CPR and brought it back. Oh, that's kind of cool. I wasn't going to read it, and then I saw the good at the end.
I guess I never considered you could do CPR on a duck.
I might have to have her on, too.
you have to.
This
yes,
is a whole year's worth of shows right here.
It is. I want to know.
Okay, I'm not doing any of the really gross ones. There's some really gross ones here. I'm not going to do that. Let's see. Oh, there's some sad ones, too. We did not look at this. Ski joring. I always thought that would be fun, except I want to ski jor behind a... I would do the ski joring part, not the horseback riding part.
I used to do that all the time when I was a teenager.
Really?
And this was even before I even knew it was a thing. Or maybe it wasn't even
probably.
It was a long time ago when I was a kid. But holy cow, it was so much fun. It was so much fun. And, you grow up in Minnesota, and that's just what you do.
Well, here's something neither one of us will ever, ever, ever do. Helped open up a living person's skull, had my fingers on their brain, and then sewed them and wired them shut again. And they did just fine. My job was instructor of neurosurgery at Penn State.
Okay, I was going to say, I hope you had some training there.
Okay, remember how I always say our listeners are so much smarter than us?
Yes.
There's a perfect example right there.
There you go. Yes. Don't try this, everybody else.
Ski joring. Another person did ski joring. Let's see here. This person has another job that we're not smart enough for, and that's injected sperm into eggs to make babies. She worked in that field. So that's kind of cool. Yeah. There's some gross ones. Oh, I got to ask her about this. Bought a zebra off the internet.
Oh, my gosh.
Something I'll never do.
Wow. Glenn, last year, I think, we had a wild, well, not a wild zebra, but a zebra who had escaped an enclosure roaming around Nashville for like a month.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, that's
really,
right.
Yeah.
I remember we covered that.
Yeah.
They found
it
eventually, right?
They did. Yeah, after about a month, and he was about 30 miles away from home.
Here's one that I doubt I'm signing up for. I didn't even know this was a thing. Performed as a drag clown and won a title doing it. I don't know what a drag clown is.
Thank you, because I'm pretty sheltered. I wasn't even aware there was such a thing as a drag
clown. I know what a
clown.
Person dressed in drag is. Is that clown dressed in drag?
I think so.
All right, whoever this is has to explain that a little further because...
Yes.
Ooh, here's one. I will do a couple more. Well, Mandy said drove a giant shoe.
Yes.
Mandy, of course, worked for me for a period of time and actually co-hosted the show several times. But she drove the Ella Bean shoe.
Yeah,
around the country. This one kissed Ray Liotta when auditioning for a part in a movie.
Ooh.
Well, that's something you and I will never do. So
no, we will never do that. No. Nope.
I was a safari tour guide at Six Flags.
That'd be fun.
That's in New Jersey. But I've been through that safari tour. It's one of those ones where you drive through, too. At least it was in those days. You used to drive your car through it, and then the giraffes would stick their head into your car.
Yeah.
All right, let's see here. Let's see if we lived in Thailand and France. Oh, and I know this person. Mm. I didn't know they lived in Thailand and France.
Huh.
If you had to pick between the two, Thailand or France?
France, probably.
Yeah, I think I'd do better with the food.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm not big on Thai food.
Yeah, I think I'd do better with the food. I don't eat any seafood or anything out of the water, so.
Oh, yeah. I know people who love Thai food. I have a lot of friends who love it. It's just not my thing.
Yeah. I probably wouldn't do there either. Married and then divorced. Married, then divorced, a balloon pilot. I assume she means hot air balloon pilot. That's
what I'm hoping so.
God, there's so many here. I can't do them all, but that was fun. What a cool.
That was total fun.
Yeah, there's a podcast in here. Maybe I'll do my first non-horse podcast. That's what I'll do. I'd have fun doing that show.
That would be great. That would be a fun podcast, Glenn.
Yeah, I have to think about that. And you'd never be short on stories because everybody has one. I think mine, I would say, and I've talked about it here on the show once or twice, is I got lost in a cave while spelunking. So,
that would be totally frightening.
Oh, that was a little frightening. We had a group of us. There were five groups, and the lead in the group of five, there were five groups of five, and our lead person was supposed to make sure we stayed up with the person in front of them. And this cave had offshoots. It was not one big circle or anything.
Yeah.
And our lead person lost the group in front of us, and we remembered how to get out. And we should have left the trail of peanuts or whatever, you know, that they talk about, M&Ms. We should have left the M&M trail.
But you couldn't see them because it's dark in there.
Yes. Well, and also we just, we would have covered them up anyway. So we did manage to get out. But that was close. That was one. Yeah. Do you have one that nobody else has ever done?
I was on stage with the Beach Boys at the Kennedy Center.
Well, that's something we haven't done. Yeah. How'd you get that done?
I was interviewing them for a documentary, and so they weren't performing. It was during rehearsal.
Were they total jerks, or were they? Tell me they were.
They were lovely.
Were they? Yay!
Every one of them were fabulous. Yes.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
And did you see our good friend William Shatner's commercial the other night?
I did.
It was one of my favorite commercials.
I did.
The guy just doesn't age.
He's like the Energizer Bunny. I don't know exactly
how old
he is.
He's got to be 92 or 93.
I think he's a little older than that, actually.
Because when we interviewed him, he was 90 or 91, and that was a couple of years ago.
I think he was 92. Yeah, yeah.
He's still making ad money.
he is, and he's still riding. He's 94. He's going to be 95. He's going to be 95 in March next month.
And he's still doing reining? He was taking up reining when we talked to him.
Yeah, I saw him maybe a year ago, and he at an event that he has, and he was riding a reining horse, and he'd be 93 at that point. Now, not doing like super fast spins and slides and stops, but he was doing it.
Jeez, I hope I make it to 70, let alone 93,
and doing that level of activity, and he still looks great.
Yeah. And apparently he's still with it mentally too. I mean, there's no problem there.
No, super sharp.
Good for him.
So good for him. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for today. Hang on, auditors. We're going to meet Andrew in our post show. Lisa, thank you so much for filling in. Where can people find your books?
In stores and online everywhere.
And we hope that Jamie's back by Friday, but I'm not promising anything because she's horse shopping and we all know how that goes.
That could be a long
thing. I'm crossing my fingers and hope she finds one. But we all know one thing. When Jamie goes horse shopping, there's always a good story. So
yes.
I'm sure we'll hear about that whenever she gets back.
Yes.
Whenever that is. Talk to you all on Friday. And tomorrow on the show, we have, I don't know what we have tomorrow. I've lost track of what day of the week it is.
It'll be an adventure.
Okay, there we go. Thank you, Lisa. See you, everybody. I'm getting old.